Welcome to the Remarkable Dentist Podcast with me, Fred Joyle, where I interview amazing dental practice owners digging into their successes and failures, their insights and hindsights, getting their views on where dentistry is going, and discovering what it took for them to become remarkable. Welcome to another episode of The Remarkable Dentist. I'm Fred Joyle, and I'm here with Dr. Sumeet Singh, who has a practice up in the central coast of California, actually several practices. And we're going to find out how that happened. He is a truly remarkable dentist, and I'm really excited to get in the conversation with him. Dr. Singh, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Fred. What a beautiful day, and I'm looking forward to our exciting talk today. Thanks for having me today.
It's my pleasure. And if you're just listening to the podcast, you don't know that on his desk, Dr. Singh has several books. And at the top of the stack is Super Bold, which is my new book. And it is me expanding beyond just dentistry to personal growth skills that anyone can use to expand their confidence and boldness. So it just came out in October, the second week of October. So check it out.
Yeah, great book, by the way, Fred. I loved reading it. I haven't gone through the whole book yet, but the first few chapters really resonated well with me. So awesome, well-written book. And I'll recommend everybody who's here, who's listening to this, and who's not listening, encourage other people in our lives to read it. Really well-written book. Even though I have your other books here, but I just kept this on the top because this is
my we're going to get into that stack of books that you've got there, because those are some great books. So the book is Super Bold with a D. People say, did you write a book about the Super Bowl? Which season? You know, it's like, no, bold, super bold. It's one word. Anyway, I like to clear that up for people who are just listening. But so let's dive in. Sumeet, what got you into dentistry?
So, Fred, interesting background on that. My dad is an ophthalmologist. And when we were in school, like I'm talking about when I was 10, 12 years old, getting on my foot, having my own bike to ride. So coming after school, I used to go to the playground and I could just be in my dad's practice without permission. So they would not say me no, I'll just go in and everybody would greet me very well. It kind of gave me a good feel. So I started going there every now and then. I would say the frequency would be once a week or so. And I kind of liked it. Everybody respected me. I was the kid of the doctor there, right? So I went in there, and eventually when I was getting a little bit older, he led me to see surgeries that he was performing. I said, okay, this guy is doing a great job serving people. And at the same time, he is happy doing what he does and enjoyed the respect he was getting out of those patients. So that was kind of something that planted a seed in us. And our parents were always like, okay, you got to study. And they influenced us to study well. And then my dad had a very good dear friend who became my dentist. I broke my friend two teeth playing.
Of course.
I went there and he fixed my teeth and I came out with a different perspective. My dad being an ophthalmologist and this guy's a dentist, and the results were even more instant. And that planted another seed in my mind. If not this thing, I might want to do something similar, but this seems to be more exciting. And when the time came around, I opted to go into dental school, even though we did have a talk that, okay, I should become a doctor and follow my dad's footsteps, but I just opted to choose becoming a dentist. And once I went to dental school, let me tell you, this is an interesting few lines I would say, I never looked back. That was something I said, okay, oh my God, that's when I started believing in God as well. There's somebody who turns and takes you to a path, which is yours. It was not like, okay, I was diehard passionate, but my passion really started when I started working in dental school, first year, second year, third year, fourth year. Like you could see me, my colleagues were done in school and I was not a slower person. I was a quicker person. I'll do their work. I'll do a lot of lab work for other people. And I just stay there and I'll play sports, but I kept on engaging more and more. So I kind of enjoyed every single moment from, I said, 10 years till until I became a dentist, which was around 24 when I graduated first back in India. Yep.
Wow. So
it's always amazing when you find your passion, like when you walk in, I call it a little bit like finding your tribe a little bit too. I had that experience when I walked, the first time I walked into an ad agency, because I had done all sorts of other jobs in between and was pretty aimless. And I, the first time I walked in, I went, wow, I could do this, and that my whole life blossomed from that moment. Yeah. So it's interesting that despite your dad being on the medical side as an eye surgeon, you immediately found the passion for dentistry as soon as you started. And of course, you're fairly unique. You mentioned this a little bit, but I've heard you talk about it and other people talk about it. You got some fast hands. You're quick on the prep and stuff like that. You just have a natural dexterity, I think, which is even better that you're in dentistry.
Yep. It helps you big time. Like, again, I go back and it's just the passion that drives you. Like when I'm working, it's not like I'm working. So I'm just like, I could do more in less time. It just doesn't get me tired. I'm there. And our goal is to be the person who can deliver the care in the most convenient and fast way. At the same time, perform it to a standard of care, which is up and beyond. So it comes back to passion. Passion gives you energy, and energy flows through your hands. That's what I see. Like I'm working and I'm like, it's my meditation time. I don't feel like I'm doing anything. I'm just in the flow going in. And the speed, I talk about it with a lot of our doctors too. Like I always say, my mentor, Dr. Nybar, he actually had practices and he's opening up practice again. He ended up selling it one time to Heartland in 2009, and he's building up his practices again. He coached me on be good first before you become fast. So he taught me, okay, learn the basic skills. You cannot skip the basic steps. Like we're going to talk about technology today, hopefully, like we have incorporated in our practices. But you want to have the basics so nicely infused that they just start flowing, and anything that comes on top of it, it helps you to speed you up more. So basics give you the drive to do anything, to take on anything, to become super bold. If you believe your roots, your skills are there and you can do more things, and the speed comes from it.
Yeah. So it's really getting solid on the fundamentals. And then, you know, it's very interesting because we were, you know, at Fortune 50, that meeting, Alan Stein was talking about that, who's the basketball coach. And he talked so much about really practicing, staying focused always on the fundamentals, never letting them go, never thinking somehow you get beyond that. So it's interesting that you got that coaching so early on. And it's one of the things I like to talk about is who guided you that became someone that really accelerated your path and kept you focused. And this is Dr. Nybar, is his name?
Chris Nybar. He's a dentist. He practiced and then he had offices in East Coast. He opened from 1 to 26 within a span of 6 or 7 years. At that time, he was mid 50 years old. And then he ended up selling all his practices to Heartland. And when I saw him, it was at a seminar. And his philosophy just resonated with me. And I could just see, okay, this is a person I can look forward to when I'm practicing in this wonderful profession. And he just infused great talks with me. Like we had good talks. He coached me throughout the process. This is where you are, might not be going right. This is what you want to do. And he, being his age, he's much older to me, very traditional guy. So not a very technology driven at that time, but at the same time, very traditional guy. So maybe that was a layering part. I already had that in me, but he layered it more that, okay, you got to be more strong on your fundamentals, practice the basics. He was all about 10,000 hours. Anything I'll talk about, he'll say, do you have 10,000 hours in this or not? And one more thing he would always say is, let's say if you're practicing something, doing something in somebody's mouth, if you cannot figure out in 15 minutes, don't spend more time on it. That means you don't know how to do it. So 15 minutes was one key, 10,000 hours was one key that he taught me. And you actually feel the difference when you're spending more time and when you have spent those 10,000 hours on something, it becomes more fluid. The speed actually comes after you have spent those hours. I might have done lots of preps I don't know the number on the top of my head, but again, if the speed comes right after those hours are spent. Yeah.
Now you went to dental school in India.
At first, right?
And so was that a situation where you got a lot of hands-on in the school?
So Indian standard of care is, it could be very different. So which means the students who are coming in, sometimes they'll be motivated by their family members to be a doctor or a dentist. Some would be, they're really hardworking people. So I was like, okay, I had a mix of both. So I had the background where people were, my family was telling me to become a doctor, but at the same time, I wanted to do it too. So when I was in the school, I spent a lot of time in the postgrad programs. First of all, I spent a lot of time in the lab. Nobody wanted to make dentures with their hands. We had 100 people. I'll make dentures for like 10 other people who didn't want to work, who were like, okay, this is something the lab would do. I never want to do it. So I'll speed up. I'll sit down with a lab guy. He would train me. We'll kind of compete with each other. I could do a setup on upper and lower teeth on a denture, which is 18 minutes, pretty fast. At one point I got, he would used to do in 13, I'll do in 18, and we'll flask it, make dentures. So that kind of got me fluid into what it is. So what that gave me is I knew what everything happens even out of the practice. So the unknown was kind of becoming a known for me now. So I knew what I'm doing in the mouth and what's going to happen outside the mouth. I kind of knew everything. That kind of reinforced more my passion, what I was doing. And plus I was loving what I was doing. When I was doing work in the lab, I loved it. Like I could stand, there was a class where you have to carve teeth and show it to your, there's a work that you got to do as you graduate to the next year. So I could carve a tooth quickly for other people. I'll stand and I'm talking to you, Fred, you're having a cup of coffee and I'll carve a tooth and I'll give it to you out of soap. So that kind of just gave me more hands-off information. So it's just getting engaged and enjoying what I did as I
grew. Well, you know, and I think the extra thing is because you really understood what the lab does and what the lab's looking for, you're prepping with the lab in mind more than a lot of dentists. And I think a lot of labs complain about it. It's like, they think I can work miracles with these preps, you know? Yeah. And so you had in your mind, I know what somebody's going to have to do. I have to give them something they can work with. So another great step. And so how did you get, tell me about the transition to the U.S.
So one of my dad's younger brother, he moved back in the 80s to U.S. And my mom was visiting in 1995 for a conference. She taught in university. And then when she was here, they applied for immigration. And we moved in 7 until 6 months prior to moving. Nobody knew we were moving. So I didn't know. Our parents were like, always, we are here. They're thriving. He had a good hospital. He still has it, my dad. So they were thriving. Everybody was good. But when the opportunity came, I'm glad they were open-hearted and open-minded to approach it for us as kids, that they were willing to move. And once we moved, absolutely, I take pride in where we are now. This country is great. Standard of care, if somebody wants to work hard, nothing like being in US. So I'm really grateful that there was a transition made by the family and we were given a chance in our lifetime to be working and living in US.
Well, I think a whole bunch of your patients are really happy you moved too. But you became aggressive in your training too. You're a AGD fellow, so you've really pushed yourself. Now, now's a good time for you to understand how many practices do you have now?
As of today, we have 5.
You have 5 practices, and how old are you?
I'm 36.
He's 36. Okay. At 36, I think I was still washing cars, maybe. No, I'm probably a little bit beyond. But that's really terrific how much you've accomplished in this short time. But let's go all the way back to the beginning. How did practice number one happen?
So never had a plan. Working as an associate, enjoying what I was doing. And like since we opened 1, 2, 3, 4, everything has been a natural calling. So somebody inside me tells me, okay, you know what? Now you have extra energy and time. Let's go for it. So that was back in 15. I'm an NYU graduate from NYU in 2013. So I worked in the practice, started July 15, 2013, worked for 2 years and 2 days. And then a couple of months prior to that, I just had a thought in my mind, which was so strong that I'm going to go for it. And it was backed up with my strong belief in my skill set. I knew that I would do it well to a point that I can survive and I can make my home and family live on this. So it was just natural calling. And the second most important part to me was I didn't want to work in a practice which is existing. I wanted to do my own style, which was not something I'm looking for something bizarre, still dental chairs there, but I wanted to do something which could stay with me for a longer term. So I wanted to build a practice which is going to be with me for 20, 30 years. So we started with a practice, we found a location, signed a lease, didn't know much about it at that point, but still the instincts were great. And I just opened up a startup practice, six office. We plumbed everything. We put 4 chairs in there. We didn't have no technology, no CEREC at that point, just a traditional style. And then we started seeing patients. That was back September 15, 2015. That was our first practice. Me and my wife, she moved from NYU as well. She's a dentist. And she delivered our first son a month after we opened the doors. She was actually working on the day when we had her son. So I had a kind of backup that she's there, I'm there, let's do it. Yeah.
I mean, that's great that you really were a team committed to making this work. And you had somebody to do some of the dentistry when you weren't there, but you could offer more variety, more options to new patients. But you just so this is in the Central Coast. Is this in Seaside? Is this where your practice was?
Yeah, that's the first practice. It's a small town next to Monterey. So Central Coast is like the central part of the California. Monterey County is where we are, where all my practices are. And Seaside is a neighboring town. That's where we started our first office.
Okay, so now you're cranking along. How are you attracting patients? Everybody always wants to know this, so I have to ask.
Like, the interesting thing is we have never had a problem having patients. Like, that's people talk about it. So the thing is, sometimes we are like, okay, we can take more, even though we want to take more. There are people out there, like they're looking for the right person to match for the care they need. Like a person who has dental needs, there's so many things which could be rightly done in a person's mouth, so many needs. So if the skill set is there, you can diagnose things and you can do things to an extent where even if you have lesser patients, you could do it. But the most important key to keep on people coming in, we have a history of 6 years and we attract a good number of patients a month, is delivering the care conveniently, predictably, and in a fast manner. Not cutting corners, delivering them what they need. People don't want to be coming in and out. So that kind of builds a reputation. If somebody needs somebody in the area, that builds your reputation that go to this practice. And plus delivering the utmost, the best possible dental care you can, so they can refer the people. And it's an engine. One engine is driving another. There are good providers, good team members. The doctor's doing good. It's a great, powerful team that becomes, and it just, I'd say, okay, sixth sense, the God just sends you patients.
You are self-propelled by creating a remarkable experience, both in a clinical way and in a personal experience way. And it turned into massive word of mouth flow is basically what you're saying. So
combination, we still do marketing. Don't take me wrong on that. We are not 100% dependent on word of mouth. We do marketing, we use mailers, we do online. We didn't used to do Google a lot before, we use it now. So we have a presence on Facebook, Instagram, but otherwise our majority of the patients would be still word of mouth. Plus we are dependent on the marketing on extent, I would say 40%, 40 to 50%, half of the patient base is coming through marketing.
Yeah, that would make sense because, did you expand the Seaside office? How'd you get bigger? Did you get bigger in that practice or did you decide it was time for practice number two?
So that's the most interesting of all the talks we're going to have today. me and my wife were working together, so we were loving it. But once we went home, there was nothing else we wanted to talk about because we were together all the time. And dental practices could be stressful. Like, don't take me wrong, that they are fun. You got to make it fun, but they could be stressful. And if you don't have something to drain when you go home, it gets hard on you. We didn't have any arguments or anything, but we believed for us to thrive at a family level as well, it's better for us to have another office where we're not working together. So we had an opportunity that came along in a neighboring town. We acquired a place. We built up the practice. It was a smaller office than what our footprint was. So that was an evolution of our second practice where we had a four ops. We recently converted that practice. We moved down the street. It just matured for 5 years to a bigger office, which is similar to what our existing offices are, because we were maxing out into that in that space. The growth was, we were kind of hitting the wall. So we moved that to a newer practice recently. But otherwise, the evolution of the second came from our husband and wife. Love, I would say.
Yes.
We want to keep it alive. Yeah.
Preserving the marriage by separating. I've seen practices make it work but mostly they make it work because they almost alternate shifts. They barely meet in the practice. They may overlap for an hour or two a day, but that's it. So practice number two opens, but now you're thinking about practice number three. What sparked that?
So then we had a doctor team who joined us, and they liked the platform we had. And then we decided, okay, we're going to expand. Now we are two good doctors in a single office. We are maximizing how much we can do in that location. And then we started thinking about, okay, let's look for another location. And then we started searching for another spot where we could fit our growth. Now we are like talking about it. The growth is coming in. The patient base is there. If you're working in the same space in a dental profession, in a six-op practice, you hit certain kind of growth pattern walls at certain stages. So we said, okay, you know what? Let's expand it to a different location where there is a need. So we went to another neighboring town, Salinas, and we opened another practice that was back in 17. And then moving forward, then we leased all these spaces. I said to myself, okay, we have done all these practices and I wanted to now start believing in, I wanted to build something which is bigger so I could centralize all my operations, which is a call center and insurance billing. Plus, if I wanted to do that thing, I wanted a bigger building. So an opportunity came up in Monterey where I wanted to serve patients in the Monterey town. We opened up a bigger 10-op practice that was just before COVID. Last year, we opened that in February of 2021. So we have a call center that's built in that space. We have an insurance billing center that's built in that space. We have our own in-house lab that we are working on right now. So we're going to have our in-house lab, even though each practice is driven by its own technology, which we'll separately discuss. So we kind of centralized, and my vision just wanted me to do something bigger than my other normal practices we had. And then as we grew this practice, even through COVID, we were growing in this office. We said, okay, we had a doctor who was working with us here. We saw an opportunity in a good shopping area in a neighboring town, which is called Prunedale. So we decided to lease a space there and we built a new practice there. The overall story, how it lumps up is I have the same contractor who has worked with me. I have the same real estate agent. So I am a believer of if people are right, let's work with them long-term. So I want to keep the relationships very well if they're working well with us. I have the same dental rep who works with me. So we already had a team established, which were doing things for us. My plans were there. Everything was there. My financing, the Wells Fargo or outside source was there. So, and I had the energy to do it. There was no reason for me to not do it, I would say, honestly, Brett.
No, yeah, so you couldn't stop yourself. No, I mean, what happened is the opportunity presented itself and you had a system and almost a rhythm for doing it, as well as the people. You know, a lot of times it comes down to who you have, not how you're going to do it. So, and what I think I understand, in each of the offices, you were grooming another associate who was learning how you do things. And then eventually you said, well, I'm going to put him or her in this next practice. Is that how it was happening?
Yeah, like if you open a new office, either I'll split my time with a new doctor, so I'll do the basic stuff so they could go in there, still do their work and have a good paycheck coming into their pocket. So I'll go in and assist the process as the practice is building, which is a timeline, depends upon the location, 6 months to a year. So you got to be ready for that part. The other side of it was the staff was growing. They were believing in what my mission was. When we started in Seaside back in 15, and I'll go with my, I had my own mindset, which is still same. And they will say, okay, what is this guy doing? He's doing a startup, and where is all the energy coming from? We don't have no patients coming in this month. We literally saw like 8 or 9 patients in that month. And what I would go in the practice 8 o'clock in the morning, and I'll talk like we are talking, keep on infusing, get to know them more so that they could be just me. And those 3 employees we started with, they are still with me till date. And they're my most key employees in the whole practice. So they stayed with me. They believed with me. Wife is still there too.
Yeah, that's good.
So they believed it's kind of coming as a feedback, everybody believing and working as a team. And as staff grew, space limiting, more opportunity arising. Plus, I had big dreams for my team members, which is, okay, I want you to see your growth as well. So my staff members started as a baseline. Now I take pride and pride who they are. Like they have grown from point A to point at least Z somewhere. So they have grown their life scale as we have grown in our practices. So that kind of, it's a good feedback. It makes me feel good that there's something we can support.
Yeah, you've got something like 40 team members at this point. Is that right?
43 as of today.
Yeah. And that is probably by the time I release this broadcast in a week or so, it'll be more than 43. But so when did you start bringing coaching in? When did you start working with Fortune Management?
Fortune, wonderful company. Like going back to my days in 15, Dr. Nybar used to mentor me. So yeah. He would talk to me one-on-one. We would have a Monday morning call and he'll make sure, okay, what's going on? Check on me, tell me what next should be done. So he kind of gauged me, okay, I'm not going off road. So he kept me on a pattern, which is predictable. And then I had to come back and relate it to my team. Sometimes they'll get it well. Sometimes the things were a little bit stronger. So when we talked about it, the strong items were hard for me to relate. So it was kind of okay. Why this Dr. Singh is coming and telling us to do all these things, which is, I already know them, their perspective, or I don't need to know them. So it was like, okay, I'm kind of not becoming the bad person, but I'm a person who could not relate those talks very well at times. And The alternate option we had is bringing Dr. Nybar to our practices, but he was planning to open up his offices. So his time constraints were not allowing him to do what we wanted to do. And his natural calling came in. He said, okay, you know what, Sumit, at this point, I'm going to let you go. Like, I believe you can do this on your own. You're doing good. And if you need me, I'm here. And Fortune Management, Bernie Stolz came to Monterey. My Patterson rep, Leslie Wilson, invited me to attend his lecture. And when he was talking, I said, okay, this is the team we need. This is the kind of culture we need in our practices, where not only I talk with the person, somebody's coming into our practice. And the most important thing with the Fortune for us was they were not dictating us what to do. They're literally coaches and helpers making sure things are done properly. So the beauty with them so far with us is we have a history for 4 years with Fortune. We started them 4 years ago. Is they first learned who I am, mixed with their own philosophy, and brought that mixture to our practice. Now I have been attending almost all the meetings since 4 years. That's a lot of meeting each month, but I love it today. And my staff keeps engaged. We are all trying to stay on the same page with the same person doing the meetings across the board. And then we do our quarterly meetings, we do our yearly meetings. So the structure has been the most lovely structure I have seen that works for dental office with Fortune. And I truly mean it.
Well, I think you heard Bernie and you said, this is the kind of culture I want to create. This resonated with you as someone who could, that you were aligned with and that could also come in and tell your people not just what is the best practice, but why it works, why you would be adapting this and not doing something else. As you said, it's great to have somebody, instead of me just going, I think we need to do this. Somebody says, this is what you're going to do. This is how it works. This is why you do it. Yeah. This is why you don't do something else instead. And as the team starts to do those things and see the results, see that their day goes better and the patients get better care, absolutely, they start to trust the whole process. And then they're all in on the coaching as well, which makes all the difference.
Like, so, I would say like a dental office is a very dynamic workplace. You could run a dental office in zillion different ways. Some people can have their own style. So you got to have what you want to achieve and not go out of that zone and have somebody keep your passion and your why aligned up in a way there you can you actually move on this path for a longer term? Because sometimes you could be doing things in life which could prove not wrong, but not absolutely good in a long-term perspective. And not having coaches in your life, it could nail you down long-term. So that's like, coaches are important. They're important. Yeah. Like, even though we grow, like, we are very committed and I'm looking forward to the meetings. Our team looks forward to it. Yeah.
Well, some of it is, as you said, it's guardrails, but as you say, if you're doing something slightly wrong for 5 years, the margin of that impact, it gets pretty wide 3, 4, 5 years down the road. It's a difference in profitability of maybe 2-3 points that turns it to 4 or 5 points or something like that. So it's great to have somebody, and you're always in expansion mode, and they're very good at helping you to make these decisions and also just reinforce. It's like, yeah, this is a good choice. And you get somebody to bounce off the ideas. Like, say, I think I want to centralize my call center. And they say, yes, it's about time to do that. Centralize your billing in your call center. You're at this, you've got 4 practices now. You're about to have 4. Let's do that. And they've done it. They've watched it happen with hundreds of offices. So they make it a lot easier for you to say, all right, I'm not alone trying to do this, and it's worked for other people, and it's the right decision. So
absolutely, there's so much to learn, and not only guarding, it's also driving your engines, like letting you grow, letting you personally grow. Like, guarding from mistakes is one big perspective, but knowing what's ahead of you, what you're achieving, what you're going for is true or not, the coaches would help you with the baseline number of practices they have. And Bernie has been a very neutral person when it comes to opinions. He is not biased. So when I have approached him for anything, his opinion has been a very open-minded, that this is what is right for me till date. Even though my practices are 5 in number, he would never tell me not to do this or this to benefit them in a certain way. So I've been given a very unbiased, good views on what Sumit should be doing or what Sumit should not be doing, which is great. I value that a lot.
And you've been allowed to craft your own vision of how a practice runs. For example, you don't take a hierarchical approach to your team, do you?
What we have is we have a very split system in our duties.
Yeah,
we do have people who are employees, staff members, team members, I would call, who have been working with us longer term than who are relatively new. So they take a split of duties, but there is a responsible person, but we don't have managers per se. We don't have back staff leader per se in our practices. When we were down to the first practice, we did have a manager, and it does not we had conversations with them, with one person, another one, when we brought in external teams in, and then the person believes, okay, I'm the manager. There is certain decision-making power I have. What in our practice we wanted to do is, I don't have a decision-making power. You don't have a decision-making power. It's a team who decides what we're going to do. If the team comes with a conclusion, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do an issue processing, which is not my decision. And I'm going to give you my insights. The coach is going to give you your insight. And then we're going to come to our best conclusion. And the best way to approach that, I thought, was not to have tags in the practice. Definitely people are paid differently.
Sure.
According to who they are. But we did not tag them with the way that they started believing, okay, I'm the person to practice. I don't call myself as the boss or the leader. I'm part of them. I'm part of the team. So I have an equal vote when it comes to decision-making. So we just wanted to keep it very similar. That was the rationale. We didn't want to put tags on who they are.
And so there are no office managers in any of the practices. Is that correct?
Correct. We don't have no office managers.
Yeah. Now, see, a lot of coaches would go, no, you need an office manager. But Fortune saw you making this work. And also that this, from your personality standpoint, your belief system, this was what you wanted to create. So they just helped you create it. And it's clearly working. I mean, your practices are thriving. So and right out of the gate. So that's an impressive thing. And it really is, in some ways, it's a definition of leadership is empowering other people to achieve the best they possibly can.
Yeah.
And in a lot of dental practices, everybody's locked into a position and they're just, and dentists wonder, well, why are they just punching a clock? It's because that's the job you offered them, right? Yeah. They don't have any input on anything. Whereas you say, look, we're going to do this as a team. We're going to make the decision. If we're going to add this technology, we're all going to learn how to use it, right? And we're going to, this is what it's going to cost us. Do we do it? And yep. The team, and if you don't have, I've seen this happen all the time. Dennis will buy certain technology. Don't get any buy-in from the team ahead of time. The team needs to do 2/3 of the work with the technology.
Right.
And they don't like it. They don't get why they have it. And they go, oh, this is another new toy of his that we have to figure out how to use. So this is a segue into what technology have you adapted and what difference has that made for you?
So we kind of have almost, we are state of art practices. Our practices are very well built, very well designed. Equipment is all nice and great. And the technology is probably up to date. Whatever we can think about, we got in our practices. So how we bring in technology in our offices is I learn about it and I talk about it with my team in our team meetings. So it's not like I'm going to a CE course or somewhere and I bring it in and I'm say, okay, this is Monday. This is what we're going to do. And the staff is looking at me, what's going on? So we take time to introduce what we're going to do. So once we are on board, they see the value in what we're going to do, how it's going to make the patient's appointment more convenient, how it's going to make their job easier, how it's going to improve my quality of care for that person during that time period. Then we go on board on those. So we have a cone beam in our practices. We have CEREC in each location. We have lasers. We have now implant systems where we could restore arches on the same day. We have the 3D scans. iCam is a new scanner where you can place implants, scan the implant positions, we can print teeth, stain them, put the teeth in the mouth on the same day. So technology is, there's so many layers into it. You could do so many different and great things with technology. What it serves you the most is you could see more patients during the same time frame by using it to the appropriate manner. Like we talked about, for example, root canal procedure. Like I trained myself. I went to Dr. Buchanan's course in Santa Barbara. I trained myself until I got good at it. I spent tons of hours on it. And then for a root canal treatment, if it's a 9 o'clock appointment, I'll have the patient seated in my chair at 9 o'clock, get started by 9:05 or 9:07. My prep's done usually by max 9:15, but for the safe side, I'll say 9:20. By the time I'm doing a buildup or something, I scan the tooth. I designed the tooth. 927 max, the crown is being milled in the machine. During the time the scanner is coming towards me, I open up the tooth for the root canal. Rubber dam goes on, and the root canal is getting irrigation. So for a root canal to work well, you got to irrigate and have the medication touch the nerve of the tooth for almost 35 minutes. So 9:25, my irrigation system is starting. So I'm constantly changing it as my crown's made. By the time crown comes back, I'm done with my root canal. And then I put the crown in. My speed is I'll put a crown in at 10:05, 10:10 max, 10:15 if I'm really seeing another patient during that time. Our other doctors can use the same technology and deliver a crown with a root canal within an hour and a half. So which makes maybe one, not two, at least less appointments. Care makes it's convenient. The patient doesn't have to be numb twice. So the technology is used to the most extensive extent. So you got to know, and how do we do it is basically going and learning the basic skills first. If you're going to do and go and do a crappy prep within 5 minutes, we're not asking for that. So we do our own. So we want to make sure the care is great. Okay.
Yeah.
So being good first and being fast after. So the technology just makes you better, but you got to have the initial engine sitting in there before you run it faster and stronger. Yeah.
Yeah. And what you've done is you've compressed every step by overlapping certain things so that you can be done in an hour and a half, and you're not neglecting any of the steps. You're just using the technology, which can be working while you're doing what you're licensed to do. That's the whole idea, is to have a team member or some technology eliminate what you have to do, and you only do what is required for you to do with your license or with that specific skill. And the patients are out of there faster. That's number one thing. Get me out.
Yeah. So, for example, when they're making chips, potato chips, right? So they cut them, they fry them. They don't wait them for it to get dry. They have a fan blowing in that dries them, and they salt them, put the seasoning in there, and pack them right away. So why do you want to put something on hold when you don't have to? And you got to believe in, okay, if you bring the technology in, again, Bernie was the person who enforced me to bring Sarah in. So when we went all in. So we brought it for all our practices, and it has served our purpose very well. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, it makes the job interesting for the team. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff they get to do that they don't get to do in a practice that doesn't have CAD-CAM technology, right?
Yeah. And plus 90% of the times we don't have to, there's no impression. Sometimes we have to take impressions for certain things, like if you're making dentures, when the patients have no teeth, but majority of times you don't have to take an impression. So everything is more cleaner. Do you want to work in a cleaner mouth, cleaner workspace? Absolutely, any day. Being a dentist, who would say no to it? Like, I have doctors who would say, like, we were talking about acquiring a practice, and the doctor does not believe in digital technology, which is okay. Everybody has their own mindset, but it's a no-brainer. You got to adapt, you got to change yourself. That's where Dr. Nyberg was good. He was, even though he's at today 65 or 67 years old, he's still in it. He loves it. He wants to learn. He wants to grow. So he is very open-minded, which keeps him growing at a faster pace than what he was doing 10 years ago, because he's open-minded. Yeah.
It makes such a difference. And I'm sure it keeps him alive too. Is why wouldn't you want to embrace what's new and different to revitalize yourself and make dentistry interesting? Because with the right technology and the right pacing, you can do dentistry into your 80s, you know, and why would you stop? Maybe you're not knocking out 4 days a week anymore, but one or two, why not? Why not get to enjoy that very gratifying thing of healing people, you know?
And to date, when Sarek is milling a crown, I still see it. It just fascinates me till late how it does it. Two birds are coming in and they're doing this. The block is moving. It's like, it's fascinating. And you actually learn from it as you see it, like how it moves it, how it moves itself. So when you're doing work in the mouth, you have somebody to look for, right? Even though it's a Sarek, which is maybe just beyond humans being's hand tactics, but otherwise it's, you see something that could be done. So you take those mindset into the patient's mouth when you're working there. It just builds you more to do.
I've never heard anybody say that in all the discussions I've had, and I've been involved with Sarek and went for, you know, probably 15 years. I've watched this technology evolve, but yes, I can see where the computer is telling the burrs how to do it in exactly the most efficient way from different angles. And you go looking at it and see, wow, that is an interesting way to cut it. I wouldn't have done it that way, but I can do that. I can add that to my repertoire of angle approaches and stuff.
And one of the things with experience, I'll tell you, Sarek uses two burrs to cut a crown.
Yeah.
Mill a crown, cut a crown, whatever we call it. So sometimes you'll see doctors who have 8 burrs on their setup to do a crown prep. You don't need those. So if you have too many things, like this book I have over here, one thing, right? So you don't need 10 things to make you perfect. So you got to rely on if the machine can mill a margin within microns, which fits perfectly with those two burrs, that means it's the person can do it. But I typically use 3 burrs total, maybe 2 usually max to prep a crown. And you don't need a 4th burr in there ever to doing whatever we do in our practice. So I'll see setups where like 8 to 9 burrs in there and the patient doctor is taking sometimes an hour to prep it because you're just getting confused on what to do. So you got to limit your focus in what needs to be done.
Yeah, that's another very interesting observation. A conclusion, like, look, if the machine can do it with 2 burrs and it comes out this finely, why do I need 6 burrs? Yeah, why am absolutely. I even considering 6 burrs? Why am I, maybe I'll give myself 1 extra. I'll have a third one maybe, but fascinating. So do you see yourself, is there any end in sight for you, or you really like the rhythm of adding practices? You're only 36 at this, and you seem to be adding like 1 a year at this point. Are you ever going to be able to stop yourself? Are you, is there a Dr. Singh going to level off at some point in your future?
We made a call actually last year where we said, okay, you know what, we're not going to open more offices. We're going to grow what we have. Maybe there was some influence of COVID in there at that point. But recently we've been in talks and I'm planning to open more practices now. My goal is to have more locations open next year. And then this is the best thing I enjoy the most. This keeps me most alive during 9-to-5 work hours. And if I do something else, I golf, I enjoy, but how much would I golf? How much would I do something else? So this is, I believe, my best return to my life and to people I can see, the people I can touch, people I can serve. This is probably the best route I have been given to do things. So I believe I'm going to do more to be in harmony with myself and to serve anybody I see as a patient, as a staff member, as a team member, the best to my ability. This is my super bold thing that I want to do the max I can to serve other people.
So I know you have a son. Is he the only child you have? How many children do you have?
Yeah, we have a son. He's 6 years old. And we had a daughter recently, beautiful little girl. 2.5 months old, turning almost 3 months actually. And that's her second one. So they're 6 years apart. The son is going to school and the daughter's home with my wife. Yeah.
Well, your son is going to have an interesting example for a father to watch. And I'm sure he's going to get to play around in the practices as he gets older, just like you did with your dad, and create a vision for himself, which will probably surprise you. I think you'll, have created a unique individual and inspired him to chase a dream. Maybe it's the same dream in a bigger way or a totally different one. Yeah. So it'll be exciting to see that chapter of your life as well. So I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and your story and your passion for this industry and your insights. I think so many people can benefit from this and realize what's possible. And that there are different ways to approach things, not having an office manager, adding a practice a year, not working side by side with your spouse necessarily. All of these things are just there's a different way to do dentistry and it's going to work. So And I appreciate, you know, we've known each other for a while now, and it's been really fun to watch you develop as a leader. Good for you. And I enjoy the friendship as well. And I enjoy watching your success. So thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Fred. And one last thing I would say is find your why and chase it like hell. Find your why, chase it like hell. Thank you so much for your time. And I reciprocate your friendship with me. And I adore it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And that's great advice too. So everyone, this is a perfect example of how you can become more and more remarkable in your practice of dentistry and enjoy your career. So if you like this podcast, feel free to share it, subscribe to it, do all of that stuff that builds my audience. But in the meantime, keep on becoming remarkable.